been doing it for 5 years now, and we've just had some amazing testimonies of people coming on the webcast and getting a revelation of the Father's love. And we've prayed for people. I've prayed for people from my living room, my spare bedroom in Abingdon in Oxfordshire in England, for people all over the world, not even laying hands on them, not even being there. And they've received a revelation of who the Father is. And it's just so exciting. We actually, there was someone a couple of years ago who came on INS. She heard the webcast for a few times and thought, this is what I need. She bypassed an A school and a B school and came straight here, which is amazing, you know. And I can tell you later on how you can get on it sometime. But it's fun to do with John McDonald and Barry Adams. We sit there on the screen and it's like we're having a cup of coffee together. The three of us just have a chat together. And then one of us would normally do some teaching or something. And it was Barry's idea, you know, 5 years ago. I was with him in Canada, and he said, hey, Mark, what about this? And I like technology and playing with things. So I said, yeah, let's give it a go. And we've been doing it since then, and John joined us 2 or 3 years ago, and it's just such fun. We have a lot of fun doing it. And so glad that so many of you have been on it before. It's good. Yeah. It's a real treat for me to be here. You know, Das sent me his email at the beginning of the year or earlier in the year, and I went home at the end of the day and I said to Fiona, my wife, I said, I've had an invitation to go somewhere. And I said, I really want to go. And she said, well, where is it? And I said, New Zealand. And I showed her the email and she said, you've got to go. And I said, do you want to come too? She hates flying, so I knew what the answer would be. but she said, no, you've got to go. And so I came back to Das and said, I'd love to come. But just to be here and to see this place, it's just so beautiful. It's just amazing. And that sunset last night was just wonderful. You know, I was almost out there with my camera. And it was just like so beautiful. And I thought, do you get that every night? You know, you spoilt. And it's just like, wow. And just the peace. I was just sitting outside my room this morning and the peace of this place was just amazing. And I thought, you know, it is for me a real treat to be here. I've heard so much from James and Denise about what this place means to them. And just to come and experience it and be here and see it is just, it's just a pleasure. It's all mine. And I really admire what you guys are doing in this 3 months. Because you're working through a lot of stuff. Do you understand stuff? That's an English expression. If you don't understand me, ask Peter. Because it's all his fault, I gather, from the talent show on Friday, that he was doing us English down, which is something us English are very good at doing. If you don't understand me, just ask him. But, you know, here you are spending 3 months dealing with your stuff. And I hope you're having a good time as well as dealing with your stuff. But, you know, I can't imagine a better place to do it. You know, I spent 6 years in a boarding school in England between the ages of 13 and 18. And in a boarding school, you deal with a lot of your stuff because you're in that sort of environment where stuff comes out the holes. And the trouble is, it wasn't the right environment to deal with it. And the boarding school I went to was, it was all boys. And most of the boys in the school either had lost a parent, or their parents were missionaries, or their parents were in the military. So they were, the parents were overseas a lot. My dad had died when I was 10. And so all of these, you know, I understand exactly what was happening now. There were all these boys with all their orphan issues, and they came out in a teenage boyish way. And it wasn't a lot of fun when it was going off, because a lot of it would get expressed in physical violence, you know, and boys would have fights, because that's what boys do. And whenever there was a fight going on, all the other boys would form this ring around you, you know, like a square, like a boxing ring. And they would cheer the name of the guy they wanted to win. But they were never cheering my name when I got into a fight. And it just wasn't a, it wasn't a comfortable environment. And there was no comfort. There was no tenderness. It was very much you had to fight to survive. And it just wasn't a good environment to deal with the pain of your heart. But this environment is like, you know, the other end of the spectrum. It's just the right environment to be in when God is doing stuff in your heart. And you got 4 weeks left, and I just think, I just, you know, go for it. Whatever he wants to do in your heart, let him do it. I had a picture before I came just a few days ago of, I'd seen photographs of this place, so I knew what it was like, but I had a picture of the jetty and where the ferry comes in. And I just had this picture of a number of you on, when you leave at the end of the school, it's like you're going to draw a line. And you might want to draw a real, get a piece of chalk or something, or and just make a line. And crossing over that line is like you're leaving a whole lot of stuff behind and stepping into something new. And you might really want to do that, draw a physical line on the ground, or get a stick and make a line in the grass or something, and step over it as just an indication of you saying, I'm going to leave a lot of stuff here. You know, don't worry about spoiling the beauty of this island with your stuff. That doesn't matter. You know, it'll get washed away. But just leave it here and step into something new. And I really felt that's what Father wanted to say to you as you come towards the end of your time here, is just be prepared to leave the old stuff behind and step into freedom, step into the newness of life that Father has for you. You know, if you're going back to Europe, you're leaving your stuff 13,000 miles away. I don't know how many kilometers it is, but it's a long way. You know, leave it down here. And step into the freedom that Father has for you. You know, I came into this whole thing about 13 or 14 years ago. Fiona and I were desperate. We kind of had run out of energy. We got four kids. Our kids are all grown up now, and they're the best kids in the world. They're aged between 27 and 21. We've got three daughters and a son. And they're just great. They really are our friends, and they're just such fun to be with, and we love them to bits. But you know, 13, 14 years ago, we were in the sort of middle of them growing up and teenagers, and you know, all, you know, whatever. And we were leading a church, and I was running a business, and life was just really, really busy. And we'd planted this church, and we were leading it, and when we planted it, it grew very, very quickly, which was really exciting. But it was very busy. You know, we were going around seeing all these new people and having a cup of tea with them and telling them about the church and welcoming them into the church. And we grew from a very small group who started the church to about 60 or 70 within less than a year. And then what we did was we ended up picking up all the people in our town who were disillusioned with their church. So they thought they'd try the new kid on the block. So they came to our church, and then they realized that the disillusionment they had with their old church, they had with us as their new church. So they decided to leave. So we went from 60 or 70 down to 20, but in about 3 months. So we would go around and see all these people and have another cup of tea with them, except it wasn't such a pleasant cup of tea this time. Because they were telling us all the bad things about the church that we were leading. And the trouble was, we knew they were right. But, you know, that's life, isn't it? And it just got, we just got worn out. And at the beginning of 2002, we said, there's got to be more than this. There's got to be more than this. And we heard of this conference called The Father Loves You in Toronto. And we looked at all the speakers. There was John and Carol Arnott. There was Peter Jackson. There was Ed Piork. There was Ian Ross. And then down at the bottom of the list was this couple, James and Denise Jordan, from New Zealand. Never heard of them, you know, and never come across them in anything at all. And we thought, oh, well, you know, we'll go to this conference. And we went, and it was a completely life-changing experience for both of us. The first night when James was speaking, I knew what he was saying was completely true. I knew what he was saying was the answer for everything that I'd wanted answers for. I knew this was it. And the funny thing was that that first night, there were 2,500 people in this conference. On the first night, God spoke to me almost audibly, and he said to me, "You will be working with that man." You know, I would be working with James. I thought, yeah, right, you know. How does that happen? And a few days later, James and Denise were having breakfast in our hotel, and they were having breakfast with another couple. And this other couple got up and left and, you know, finished their breakfast and walked out. And I thought, this is my chance. You know, I can go and talk to James. And then I had this sort of shock, like, so then what do I say to him? And you can't sort of go up to someone you don't know and say, "Hello, my name's Mark. God's told me I'm going to be working with you." You know, and actually now I know James, that's probably the last thing you would ever say to him. So I left it. I didn't do anything with it. But 6 months later, I heard of a guy in the UK who sold all of James's resources. So I phoned him up and I said, "I want a copy of everything. I don't care whether it's 5 or 50 or 100. You know, I want everything." And the guy said, "Oh, I can do something better than that." He said, "We've just had a cancellation in James's itinerary. Would you like him to come to your church?" Well, there's only one answer to that, isn't there? And I said, "Well, we normally make decisions as a group of elders, but the answer is yes." And James came and stayed in our house, and that was just the start of this journey, really. But, you know, that week in Toronto for us was just a complete baptism and immersion into the Father's love. It was just completely amazing. You see, when I left school when I was 18, I was planning on going to university, but for some reason, everybody in my year at school did really, really badly in their final school exams. It wasn't just me, it was the whole year did really badly, and none of us ended up doing what we'd planned to do. So I didn't go to university, but I stayed at home and I started my job and so on. But I threw myself into the life of our church. You know, I became really, really involved in our church. And I loved it. You know, I love to serve. You know, I would cut the grass around the church building. I would put the chairs out. I would do the coffee. I would do the teas. I would do the children's work. You know, I just loved to do it because, you know, it was just in my heart to serve. And you know, it was just a delight. And I loved the pastor of the church. He and his wife were really good friends. They took me in and he taught me how to read the Bible. Not like just open the cover and read a book. You know, he taught me how to read and listen to what God was saying. And, you know, I learned the hard way because I would go and see him for coffee on a Saturday evening and he'd say, "What's God said to you this week?" I won't know what God said. You know, nothing, you know, is the short answer. "Well, why don't you see what he says to you next week?" And then next week I'll go and have coffee with him. "What's God said to you this week?" Nothing. You know, and he taught me how to listen to God's voice. And that's something I really, really appreciate. Because, it, you know, we've got to look. You know, the Father's speaking all the time. And, you know, he speaks to us in such a natural way that it is actually easy for us to hear him when we know how. And so, you know, I really love that side of things, you know, just being involved with church life and so on. And then one Christmas, we had all of our group of churches, we had a sort of a young people's holiday. We went up to one of our beautiful parts of the UK, the Lake District, and we're just up there in early January, and it was a really great time, just fun climbing in the hills and being outside and so on. But at the end of that week, on the Friday night, we just had a meeting together, and one of the leaders from one of the other churches who knew me a little bit, but he didn't know me very well, he came up to me at the end of that meeting and he said one sentence that totally, totally changed my life. He came up to me and he knelt down on the floor in front of me and he put his hands on my shoulders and he looked me in the eyes and he said, "Mark, you've learned to be a servant, but God wants you to be a son. You've learned to be a servant, but God wants you to be a son." And those words went right into my heart. And I knew from that moment onwards that I was different. When I prayed, from that moment in time, I called God Father. Nobody told me I had to. Nobody said, because that man has prayed for you, you must call God Father. It was just a response from my heart. And from that moment, I knew that God was my Father. And I was about 20 or 21 at that point in time. And I knew that if God was my Father, then he must be everybody else's Father. But I wasn't hearing that language in our church. I wasn't hearing that language, and I didn't even know what the language was. But I wasn't hearing it. And I wasn't seeing that kind of, you know, people living out this relationship of God being a father and us being sons and daughters. And for 20 years, I carried this longing in my heart. And the only way I can really describe it is to say that there's a language that no one was speaking. And I guess you understand that because we found that language, haven't we? And I knew there was this language that no one was speaking. And although I was in a good church and had a lot of good things going for it, this language that I was yearning for wasn't being spoken at all. When I went to Toronto, 20 years later, I heard that language. You know, through people like James and Denise, through John and Carol, through the other people there, I heard that language. And I knew I wanted to give everything for it. Because it was just like, this is the reality of the gospel. This is what it's all about. And the first night when James started speaking, I knew this is it. He was speaking on sonship. And I thought, yes, this is the answer. And so for me, it's like this is all there is. There's nothing else. And that week in Toronto, I'd gone with a list of things I wanted God to deal with in my life. You know, I'd written out this list of all the stuff that nobody knew about, not even Fiona, but all the stuff inside me that was there that I'd carried for long enough and I wanted God to sort out. And so I wrote a list on a piece of paper. And on the first ministry time of the conference, I was out there because I wanted God to deal with my list. And somebody prayed for me, and, you know, as we did in those days, I fell over and I was on the floor. And they just knelt down and they put their hand on me and they were just praying for me. And then they stopped praying, but they still had their hand on me. And I was lying on the floor getting really, really frustrated. Because I was saying, come on, God, I want you to deal with my list on the first night and then I can enjoy the conference. And, you know, gradually this guy was pushing down on my chest even harder. And I thought, you know, I had this, because I'm British, my eyes were closed. And I had this vision of a great big Canadian lumberjack. Sorry, any Canadians here, but we were in Canada. But I had this vision of this great big Canadian lumberjack pushing me through the floor. And I couldn't concentrate on my list. And, you know, I was absolutely convinced God wanted to deal with this list. And I couldn't concentrate because this great Canadian guy was pushing me through the floor. So I decided that I had to get rid of him. And I decided I had to get rid of him in a very British way, because that's what I am. So I decided I would half open one eye and smile sweetly at him. Like sort of... And then I thought I better have a plan B in case he didn't get the hint. Because, see, if it had been Peter, he would have got the hint. But because, you know, we English understand each other, you see. And he would know exactly what that little smile and that half-open eye meant. And then I realised that if this Canadian guy didn't understand my English way of speaking, then I might need to be a little bit more direct. So I came up with this phrase I would say to him, "Excuse me. Would you mind if, you know?" And I was hoping that would do the trick and I wouldn't have to sort of resort to physical violence and throw him off. So I eventually plucked up enough courage to half open my eye with my half smile, sweetly looking in this Canadian's face. And when I did, there was no one there. And there was still this great big hand pushing me through the floor. And now I'm a little bit slow sometimes. But on this particular occasion, I realized that this was God's hand. And I very quickly said, "Oh, God, it's you. How nice." I'm glad you've turned up. You know, can we talk about my list? I thought it was really good of him to turn up, put his hand on me and ready to take my list and sort me all out. And I said, "My list, you know, the list I wrote, you know, all the stuff, you know, we had this chat back at home, do you remember? We wrote the list, you know, I wrote the list." And there was silence. And I kept going on and on. "Come on, Father, this list." And then eventually there was this voice. And it was God speaking to me as a true Englishman. He said, "Mark your list." And I said, "Yes, my list." He said, "Would you mind?" He said, "Would you mind?" He said, "Would you mind?" I said, "Yeah, I would mind if you dealt with the list." He said, "No, would you mind if we dealt with my list this week?" Now, I knew what was on my list, and I was safe with my list. I didn't know what was on his list. And he said, "Would you mind if we dealt with my list this week?" And, well, I have learned to say yes to God. I said, "Yes, as long as we deal with mine tomorrow." And he said, no, "I'm not interested in your list." I said, "You're not interested in my list. You ought to be interested in my list. You know, you're God and I'm me and I'm in a mess and you should be interested in sorting me out." And he said, because that's how I thought. And he said, "I'm not interested in your list." So we had this little discussion about why he wasn't interested in it, because I thought he should be interested in my list. And he said, "Would you mind if we worked on my list?" And I said, "Okay." I said, "What's on your list?" And he said, "There's only one thing on my list." He said, "I want to baptize you in my love." And I kind of thought, I like the idea of that better than my list. So we stayed with his list. And on the Friday night, at the end of the conference, I just said, "Father, what about my list?" He said, "Don't worry about it." Do you know, 6 months later, I realized that most things on my list had been dealt with simply by learning to live in love. You know, simply by allowing his love to fill me, the stuff on my list had gone too. So I got two for the price of one. But that was just such an amazing time. And we had James stay in our house 6 months later, which was just incredible. And on the Monday night, he'd spoken at a leader. We had our leaders in our living room, and he'd spoken. And it was kind of lukewarm received. You know, people were not really positive about it, which was really sad for me. But James was just leaving the living room to go up to his bedroom. And I said, James, before you go, because I was taking him back to his next place the next day. I said, James, before you go, I want what you've got. And he came back into the living room and he just said, well, I'll just simply pray for you. And he put his arms around and said, let these arms be your arms. And I felt absolutely nothing. You know, I felt, oh, is that it? And I thought, oh, well, you know. But I knew something had changed inside of me. And that began this amazing journey of just walking with Father and, you know, learning what it means to live in love. The next night, I'd taken James off to his place, and Fiona and I were sitting in our living room, and we were kind of thinking, you know, we just sort of sitting there, wow, you know, what's hit us? And we suddenly were aware that our youngest daughter, who would probably, she would have been about 9 or 10 at that stage, she was in the bedroom above our living room, and we were suddenly aware that there was this deep sobbing coming from her bedroom. You know, like deep here, sobs. So Fiona and I went up to her room and said, what's up, honey? And she said, he's gone. He's gone. And it was just really deep inside of her. And we said, who's gone? James has gone. And it was just like, she knew. And this was a shock to me. Because she knew that not only had James gone, but the presence of the Father had gone. And I thought, wow, you know, out of the mouths of 10-year-olds, you know, that something of what we all know what James carries, but that presence of the Father had left our house after that weekend. And I thought, I want it back. You know, I want it back. I don't want my kids to grow up not knowing what this is all about. You know, I want it for them. I want it for me. I want this presence back. And that's really been our journey. 6 months after I met James, I thought I knew everything there was to know about the Father's love. Now I realize I haven't got a clue. And if I can give you a gift this week, if I could give you a gift, it would be to give you the assurance that you can live loved. Yeah. That you can live loved. But I know I can't give you that gift because you've got to find it for yourselves. I've had to find it for myself. But I've come to know that it really, really is possible for us to live in love. It really is possible for us to live in love. See, it frustrates me. It saddens me when I see a lot of people coming through our A schools or B schools or A schools times five. And 6 months later or a year later, you can see or you just know it's not made a difference to their lives. And that really, really saddens me because I know what a difference it's made to my life. And I know what a difference it's made to many, many people's lives. And, you know, I want people to discover that they really can live in love. I don't know if you've ever read the Book of Lamentations. Lamentations is not the most cheery book in the Bible. You know, we know about two or three verses from the middle of chapter three, don't we? You know, this I call to mind because of his great love. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies are new every morning. You know, that's all we know of Lamentations, isn't it? But actually, I would encourage you to read it because chapter five really just sums up what the heart of an orphan is like. But chapter 3 sums up what most of us feel like most days. The guy who wrote Lamentations, he was having a bad day when he wrote chapter 3. He might have been having a bad week. He might have been having a bad month or a bad year, but life was not going well for him. And all of the pressures and all of the hassles and all of the turmoil of life was weighing down upon him. And in the midst of that, he said, "Yet this will I call to mind. Because of his great love, we are not consumed." And all of us, you know, if we are planted in love, if we're rooted and grounded in love, you know, we can have a bad day. I have bad days just like the rest of you. You know, there are things happening that I would rather they didn't happen. And, you know, we can, when I read Lamentations chapter 3, I think that's just the story of my life. You know, things are not going well, it's not a good season or whatever. But the key is to be like the writer, is to remember his great love. And to remember that his mercies never fail us. They never let us down. And, you know, and I just encourage you that when you go back home, you will have bad days. Sorry. But you will. You know, you might go home and have a few good weeks, a few good months, but there will come a time when you have a bad day. You will have a time when you begin to question, what's God done in my heart? Is this Father who is so good and so wonderful, why is he letting me go through this stuff? See, that will happen. And I encourage you to be like the writer to Lamentations, to remember, because of his great love, his mercies are new every morning. See, it's easy for us not to remember. It's easy for us to forget. It's easy for us just to carry on in our bad day and trying to sort it out for ourselves. Thinking we've got the answers. Well, we might have a few answers, but we don't have all of the answers. And we need to come to that place where we just stop and say, "Father, I need you again." Because that's what living in love is all about. It's recognizing that it's all about him. And letting our roots go deeper and deeper. You've had such a wonderful privilege to be here. To let your roots go down into the Father's love. And I would just encourage you to keep letting your roots go deeper and deeper. See, I'm not a gardener. Fiona's the gardener in our family. But I have noticed that when a plant gets too small, too big for the pot gets too small, she puts it in a bigger pot. And it's like that with the Father's love. It will never, you know, it's never going to restrict us or limit us, because actually the pot we're planted in is limitless. And we can never experience the full extent of what that means. But we can continually go deeper and deeper and deeper. See, I suppose that's the story of the last 13 or 14 years for me, is I've discovered that we can live in love. And even when we're having bad days, even when stuff is going on, even when we would rather say, "Beam me up, Scotty, lift me out of here," we can live in love. And that's the only, and it's the best place to be. When I really understood what Jesus said in John 17, verse 26, it gave me a whole new perspective on what it means to be a son of God. See, these are Jesus' last words before he's taken away to the cross. And he says at the end of that prayer, it's like his final declaration. He says, "Father, I have given them the revelation of who you are." I have given them the revelation of who you are. and I will continue to make you even more real to them. See, one of the amazing things is, you know, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. We know that, don't we? And we always kind of have in our mind that Jesus is the way to us becoming a Christian. And it's like he becomes the way and we become a Christian and then he stops being the way. But that's not what it says here. He says, I will continue to make you even more real to them. See, Jesus continues being the way to the Father. He's always the way to the Father. And his desire is that he will continue to make the Father even more real to us. And I guess all of us, to one extent or another, we've had a revelation of what the Father is like. And Jesus wants to make him even more real to us. And that's a journey that never, ever stops. I will continue to make you even more real to them so that they may experience the same endless love that you have for me. When I understood that, it changed everything in my heart. That Jesus says he wants us to experience the same endless love that the Father has for Jesus. That is an amazing gift that we're given. That we would experience the same endless love that you have for Jesus. For your love will now live in them, even as I live in them. Isn't that just a wonderful promise? That for each one of us, we're drawn into this beautiful, intimate relationship with the Father. And Jesus says, you can live in the same endless love that I live in. And I feel like I'm only just beginning to understand what that means. And, you know, I just see so much more of what Father wants to do. And, you know, my prayer is that we would know that we can live in love. And that would become the root and foundation of everything that we do and everything that we are. I think it's coffee time.
Thank you, Mark.